Ephesians chapter 6. As we look at, we began to look at this on last week. And Ephesians chapter 6, it deals with the spirit-filled life, but also it's dealing with the parent-child relationship. We just got through looking at the husband and wife relationship. And so now we look at the parent and child relationship. And so when you look at Ephesians 6 verse 1 and 2, basically the apostle gives us two reasons for the child to obey the parents. First of all, the first reason we talked about, they are to obey in the Lord. That means that their obedience is part of their Christian obedience. And then second reason is simply it's right for the child to obey their parent. And so as we start tonight in verse 2 he says, honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. Now as we look at verse 2, he starts out by saying honor. When you look at the word honor, the word honor means have inward respect. It has reverence for. And so while verse 1 speaks of action, verse 2 speaks of attitude. So verse 1 speaks of action, verse 2 speaks of attitude. And so Paul deals with the motive behind the action. And so the right attitude behind the right act of obedience is simply honor. So that's why he says you honor your father and mother, which means to value highly. It means to hold in the highest regard and respect. It's a verb. It's a noun form. The word is used in terms of reverence. It's used in terms of honor regarding God the Father and Jesus Christ. And so it's inadequate for children to obey parents only outward, according to verse number 1. But also they must respect and honor them inwardly. So outwardly they are to obey them. Inwardly they are to honor them. And so respect for parents is a grave importance to Almighty God. That even you remember Moses commanded. When you look in Exodus chapter 21, in Exodus 21 in verse 15, you know, he talks about he who strikes his father or mother shall surely be put to death. Now think about that. Now, what was that? What if that would happen today now? If we were living back then, if you strike your father, you strike your mother, you'll be put to death. Ooh, man, that's tough, ain't it? That's tough. And so we see that. And so he also goes on, he who curse his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. Now look at that. If you strike them, if you curse them, you're going to be put to death. So you know, how many children would be around now if we were back then? You know, it wouldn't be too many of us around, right? So we have to understand that. So that was serious to God. You honor your parent. You obey your parent. Because if you did not, then if you would hit them, if you disrespect them, and even if you curse them, you'll be put to death. So that was some serious things, either physically or verbally. You know, we just didn't, just verbally. Either physically or verbally, abuse of parents. It was a capital offense in ancient Israel. So they couldn't do that then. And so honor of parents encompasses providing for them when they can no longer provide for themselves. And so, you know, just as parents, you know, we spend 20 and 30, you know, years taking care and providing for our children. And so the children are to spend whatever time and money is necessary to care for their parents, and when they are no longer able to care for themselves. And so I think that's very important. So then he goes on and says, you honor them, which is the first commandment with promise, or for this is the first commandment with promise. And so you remember when God gave the Ten Commandments back in Exodus chapter 20, the first law that was governing human relationships was Exodus chapter 20 and verse number 10. Let's go back and look at that in Exodus chapter 20. And that's what he's in verse number 10, he says, verse 12, Exodus 20, verse 12, he says, honor, there it is, thy father and mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth. And then when you go to Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 16, Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 16. He says there, honor, there it is, honor thy father and thy mother as the Lord, as thy God has commanded thee, that thy days may be prolonged, and it may go well with thee in the land which the Lord thy God giveth. So when you go back to Ephesians chapter 6, you see where Paul tells, he says the same thing, honor thy father and mother, which is, he goes back, which is the first commandment with promise. So he's taking them back to Exodus chapter 20, verse 12, and Deuteronomy chapter 5, and verse number 16. And so we see this. It's the only command of the ten that relates to the family, because that principle alone secures the family fulfillment. And so we have to honor, the children have to honor their father and mother. And so then he goes on in verse 3, as we just looked at that in Deuteronomy, and we looked at that in Exodus. He says in verse 3, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest livest long on the earth. So we see that the command to honor your father and mother in verse 2 is twofold. It's twofold. That it may be well. That's the first thing. That it may be well, which it relates to the quality of life. When he says that it may be well, it talks about the quality of life. And then that thou may live long on the earth, it relates to the quantity of life promise. So we see that it may be well relates to the quality of life, and that it may live long is the quantity of life. So we have that. Now the original promise, when you go back, the original promise was to Israel, and it involves many tangible physical things and earthly blessings. And so what Paul is referencing here, and what Paul is showing, that it also extends to Christians today. Not only was them, but it's for us today. And though its blessings may not always be tangible, a family where children and parents live, now watch this, in mutual submission, mutual love and submission. It'll have a rich blessing when that whole family is doing their part, is being submissive and having mutual love. Why? Because it all goes back to verse 21. You do it in the fear of the Lord. That's why you do it, because you want to be pleasing to all, to mighty God. And so we know that Christian families and parents, they ought to be very interested in their children's welfare. And I know that there's a whole lot of parents that they are interested in their children's welfare, and we should be. So children who honor their parents, they can learn from parents' experience. Because guess what? The parents have went through it. And so as they grow old, when they get their families, then their children are going to learn from their experience, because they have went through some things. And so children who are obedient to parents, you know, many times they don't get on drugs, they don't get on alcohol, they stay in school, they do well. Why? Because of that submission, because of that honor, because of that respect, because of that reverence that they have. And so children falls in line just like the husband and the wife. Children are just as much commanded to be filled with the Spirit as adults. They are in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 18. And also be subject to one another. What? In fear of the Lord. It's a family affair. The husband has to be in fear of the Lord. The wife has to be in fear of the Lord. The children has to be in fear of the Lord. And then he goes on, and in verse number 4, he then says, "And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." Now, when you look at verse 4, in verse number 4, this is the first command to parents by Paul, and is negative, because he said, "Father, provoke not your children to wrath." Now, you have to understand that this was a new concept for Paul's day, because when you go back to the pagan strongholds such as Ephesus, and what you're going to find back then is most families were in shambles. The mutual love among family members was unheard of back then, and so a father's love for his children would be hard to imagine back then. Why? Because when you understand that, when you look at that, provoke not, because in the pagan world of Paul's day, even in the Jewish households, what would happen was that most fathers would rule their families. They would rule their families with domineering authority, rigid authority. And what would happen is that the Roman law, that a father had virtually life and death and power not only over his slaves, but he had power over his entire family. Well, what do you mean? What do you mean? He could cast any of them out anytime he wanted. He could have put them out. Not only that, he could put them out of the house, he could sell them as slaves. Well, that was some tough things back then. He could sell them as slaves. He could put them out. And guess what? He can even kill them. That's the type of power that the fathers back there in the pagan world, they had. They had a lot of power. That if I got tired of, you know, if I got tired of you, I put you out of the house. Or if I didn't put you out of the house, I could sell you, or I can kill you. You ain't never heard of that. And I'm glad we don't hear of that. I'm glad that, you know, because it was back then, it was tough. It was tough back then. And so guess what? They were not accountable. They could do all of this, and they weren't accountable to no one. They could put them out, they could sell them, or they can kill them, and they weren't accountable. They weren't held accountable. And so that was some tough things. And so when he says fathers, he said fathers, the word technically refers to a male parent. But it also used for parents in general. When he said fathers, because you go back to verse number one, because Paul had been speaking to both parents. He'd been speaking to the father and the mother there in verse number one. And even the same word is used if you go to Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 23. You're going to find the same words used for Moses' parents. They use the word parents there in Hebrews 11 and verse 23. So when you get to the provoke not, what Paul is doing is now we know what would happen back then. We know how it was handled back then. But what Paul is trying to get them to understand there in verse number 4 when he says, provoke not your children to wrath. He makes clear that a Christian's father's authority over his children does not allow for unreasonable demands. You don't put your you don't sell them. You don't kill them. So he's trying to get them to understand that it does not allow for unreasonable demands and constraints that might drive their children to anger, to despair, and to resentment. And so how can fathers provoke their children? Fathers can provoke their children to wrath by what? Injustice. Not only by injustice, by a loss of temper. And not only by that, but undue, you know, really punishing them, cruelty and favoritism and pushing achievements beyond reasonable bounds, suppressing them, ridiculing them, misusing them, abuse of power. All of these things can provoke. And so Paul is telling them, listen, you don't provoke them, but this is what you do. In verse 4, he tells them what they need to do. He says, but bring them up. How? In the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. They've done all of those things, but you don't do those things now. But what you do is you bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. When you look at the word nurture basically means training. You train them. All right? You train them. And it's denoting spiritual education. You train them to know who God is. You bring them up to know what God can do and how God can help them. You know, we quote that, bring the child up in the way he should go. When he get old, he should not depart from it. So how do you do that? You train them. Give them spiritual education. Admonishing, when you talk about admonishing, is instructions that points out one's responsibilities and duties. You let them know, listen, you have a responsibility not only to, but to God. So you train them spiritually to know who God is. But not only do you train them, but you're going to have to lead them by example. You can't tell them who the Lord is if you don't know who the Lord is. You can't tell them what the Lord has done, what the Lord can do for them, if you don't know what he has done for you. So you got to train them by example. You got to show them that, hey, I trust the Lord. I know what the Lord can do. And so you train them. And so he says, bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of who? The Lord. The Lord. So he goes back. If you go back to 21, he talks about what? The fear of the Lord. And right here, he's talking about what? Bring them up in the Lord. All right? And so what did this mean? This indicates that behind the parents' rearing and instructions of their children stands the Lord as the chief teacher and the chief educator. He's the chief teacher. He's the chief educator. So you bring them up knowing, teaching them about God, teaching them about Jesus, teaching them about the Holy Spirit. And so parents must discipline their children in love. In love. That's the key. In love. To be hateful and to be short with children is setting a bad example. You got to teach them in love. You got to discipline them in love. So parents should be loving. Parents should be caring for their children. Criticism of children makes them feel discouraged. In other words, you will never amount to anything. That's discouraging. And guess what? The child will feel that because of that parents have said you will never amount to anything, that child will go on and think that I'm nothing. That I'll never amount to anything. I can't do anything to please my parents. So you bring them up. You encourage them. You know, thing when they do bad, you know, you let them know. But when they do good, you let them know as well. All right? Don't never always just always point out the bad things and never say anything good. You know, encourage them and help them along. We should encourage them every chance that we get. We have to encourage them. You know, and we have to take time to spend with them. Because guess what? If we don't give them attention, if we don't sit up there and spend time with them, I guarantee you somebody else will. And it might be the wrong influence. And so we need to, our responsibility is to nurture them, to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And so the most important, if you don't hear anything, the most important thing to do is to teach your children to love God. That's the most important thing. Teach them to love God. That they can always, if nobody else that they can depend on, you teach them and help them to know you can always depend on God. God will be there. God will help you. When things are going bad in their life, you let them know God is there. God can help you through the bad things that you're going through. So we have to instill God in them. But in order to instill God in them, you need to instill God in you. All right? Because when you instill God in you, you can instill God in them. You can help them along the way. All right? So the key to right discipline and instruction of children, it is being of the Lord. Being of the Lord. And so everything parents do for their children is to be of him, according to his word and guidance, His power, and His Holy Spirit. And then, look what He does. He shifts. He's already talked about the relationship with the husband and wife. He just used in these few verses, 1-4, the relationship of parent and children. And now He goes to the third relationship, and that is in verse 5 through all the way through verse number 9. He says in verse 5, servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in singleness of your heart, as unto Christ. So what Paul is doing now is that Paul continues to deal again with the practical effects of the Spirit-filled life. Don't ever forget that, because what Ephesians is dealing with is the Spirit-filled life. If you have the Spirit-filled life, then you're going to be submissive, you're going to be pleasing to God. You're going to have that relationship with husband and wife is going to be pleasing to God. That relationship with parent and children is going to be pleasing to God, and even with the servants is going to be pleasing with God. Because without none of this, then guess what? It won't be met. So we got to have God in the forefront. So verse 5 through verse 8, it teaches about submission of slaves and workers. And then in verse 9, it's going to be teaching about the submission of masters and employers. So let's look and see what he says in verse 5. He starts out by saying, servants. Servants. And basically, it's the meaning of it, slave, in what Paul is dealing with. He's talking about slaves. Because, see, slaves in both Greek and Roman culture, they had no rights legally. All right? They had no rights legally, and they were treated as commodities. We're talking about back then. They was treated as commodities. They didn't have any rights back then. And so what happened was the Roman citizens, they came to look on work as beneath their dignity, and so what happened was is that slaves were bought, they were sold, they were traded, they were used, they were discarded, they were heartless. And if they were just animals, that's how they treated them under the Greek and the Roman culture. That's how they treated them. They treated them as nobodies. They were nobodies. And so we find that there was much abuse that was going on, and seldom good treatment you could find. And so the Bible, when you look at the Bible does not speak against slavery itself. But guess what? It spoke against the abuse of it. And let's look at some of the scriptures to see. Let's go to Exodus chapter 21. All right? Exodus chapter 21. And let's see what he talks about. In Exodus chapter 21 and verse 16, he says, now watch this. If you treated them wrong, if you treated them bad, notice what he says. He says, and he that stealeth a man and selleth him, or he be found in his hands, he should surely be put to death. All right? And so we see that if you sit up there and abuse them, look at what was going to happen. Well, let's look at another. Let's go drop on down to verse 26. Verse 26 of that same thing. In verse 26, he says, and if a man smite the eye of his servant, or the eye of his maid, that it perish. He shall let him go free for his eyes' sake. And if he smite out his manservants too, or his manservants too, he shall let him go free for his too sake. And so we see what was transpiring. And then you go to Leviticus. Leviticus chapter 25 and verse 10. Leviticus 25 and verse 10. In Leviticus 25, and ye shall hallow the fifth year and proclaim liberty through all of the land and unto the inhabitants thereof, and it shall be, that's what I'm looking at? Yeah. Am I on verse 10? Yeah, okay. And it shall be all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof, and it shall be a jubilee unto you, and ye shall return every man unto his possession, and ye shall return every man unto his family. That was the time that they had to return those back. And so you can look at Deuteronomy 23 and verse 15 and 16. And so what is Paul talking about? Paul says, now he said, listen, servants, be obedient. Let's go back to Ephesians chapter 5:6. Ephesians chapter 6. So he says, servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh. And so when he talks about your masters according to his flesh, it means your human master. That's what he was talking about. Your human master. Servants are to carry out their slave duties with fear, with trembling, that is, with careful concern to do a job, and with respect to their masters. All right? They are to obey in everything at all times. And so again, he's dealing with the servant and the slave and the master relationship. And I know, you know, I'm trying to help get through with this part because, you know, that can bring you down. But it's in the text. So I have to explain to what he's talking about. And then he says, singleness of your heart. It refers to mental disposition, attitude that render obedience out of sincerity and not hypocrisy. But then guess what he says? As, y'all see that? As unto Christ. This explains why the servant should obey his master. Obedience rendered to the master is the obedience rendered to the Lord. So every one of these things, you always have one ingredient: the Lord. Y'all notice that? The Lord. He talks to the husband and wife, fear the Lord. He talks to the children, unto the Lord. Now he talks to the servant, and he says there in verse number 5, as unto the Lord. And then in verse number 6, he goes on in verse 7, God's credits and rewards would be appropriate to the attitude and to the action of our work. And so he says, he tells them, not with eye service, as men pleases, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. Now when you go back and you actually look at verse 5 and how do it apply to us today, it applies to us today that, you know, that we are servants. That we are servants. And even on your job, you know, you have a boss on your job. And you ought to be, as Christians, you need to do your job the best of your ability. Why? Because you are trying to please the Lord. You're trying to please the Lord. And so he talks about our service. And what our service means, he talks about working well. You know, you're working only, you know, when you're being watched by the boss. You know, I'm working hard because I'm being watched. But what happens when you're not being watched? He says, listen, don't just do it just because somebody sees you. You do it as the right thing, because you're trying to be pleasing. Was that the first bail or second bail? Oh, thank you. Okay. All right. So we'll pick up that, and let me give you the men pleasers, and let me close out. Men pleasers is working only to promote one's welfare rather than to honor the employer and the Lord. And we'll talk about that beginning on next week. All right.